Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, we are back on 94.1 FM Frogtown Radio for another episode of Mouthing Off, a theater, arts, and culture podcast where we talk all things theater, Twin Cities, and where those things come together. We love theater in the Twin Cities. It's finally spring. We always have to have a chat about the weather at the beginning of the episode because we are polite Midwesterners, and it's not great yet, but it's... You know, it's...
We're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. You know, it's the cruelest month. But I'm here today to talk about a show that my wonderful co-host, Amanda Forstrom, is involved with. Amanda, how are you? And what is the show?
I'm doing fantastic. My name is Amanda Forstrom, and I'm so sorry that we're missing our third leg of our tripod here today. Kevin Couchman is out with his family, enjoying time with them. We miss him dearly, so it'll just be led by the ladies today. So our guests will have to watch out. We're going to ask the tough questions here today. No, I'm so excited because I'm actually involved in the production that we're talking about today. We're going to be diving into theater, a production at History Theater in ye old St. Paul. We love her. St. Paul, get on over there to History Theater and get your tickets for Hungry Like the Wolf by Sandra Struthers. And I'm actually understudying the playwright and the actress, Sandra Struthers. This is a one-of-a-kind piece, which is amazing. And before we dive in, it's a one-of-a-kind piece because the playwright is actually, I don't want to give away the shtick, but it's kind of the shtick, is actually on stage. And that's a really, really rare thing. It's also very terrifying as an understudy to try and, you know, learn all of those lines and... do my due diligence and hopefully not fill her shoes. But yeah, so it's been really exciting. Anyway, Hungry Like the Wolf, get your tickets at historytheaterre.com, historytheater.com. And we are here with one of the cast members, the only male cast member, and I believe the only male cast and creator, cast and creative person or tech person. I think it's an all-female behind-the-scenes show as well, which is really very cool. But we are here with Sam Landman. Sam is an actor and also a director, correct?
At times. More of a writer, actor. But yes, I have directed, but there are too many good directors out there to, you know, throw my face in there too.
Well, you wear many hats in this show, as folks will hopefully see. And so you obviously have a lot of practice wearing many hats in real life. So, Sam, we always start off the episode with kind of an origin story of how we got to this moment. So how are you finding yourself in St. Paul doing this show as an actor, writer, director?
Well, initially, I think... Oh, it was in the aughts. I did my first History Theater show called Axel and His Dog, which was based on a TV show, Minnesota kid show. 50s, maybe 60s. I'm probably getting that wrong. It was written by Don Stoltz, who started Old Log Theater, RIP. That's no longer a theater. Also, Don has passed away, sadly, but not to bring the whole thing down from the very beginning. But I got cast as Don Stoltz, who wrote the play. And I would go out for history theater here and there. I did another show called Fireball, which is about the Hinckley Fire. And then many years later, I did a show called Superman Becomes Lois Lane, which was the last show at History Theater before the pandemic, before the lockdown. So, I mean, literally, there was another show sort of rehearsing once we were done, and they just had to leave everything on the stage and be like, we don't know if we're ever coming back. So that's kind of my history with History Theater. I just lucked out and got a was in a few shows, and then this came along, and I'd worked with Laura Loeffler, who's the artistic director of the History Theater, as well as the director of this particular show. She also directed Superman Becomes Lois Lane.
Excellent.
So yeah, that's kind of how I fell into this.
Yeah, Laura Loeffler, shout out to her. She is the new artistic director at History Theater, and like you said, is directing this show. So you can see her work and sort of the vision that she has, and kind of a jump start. Very exciting time to see her work. So you kind of get a sneak peek into what's coming for her and sort of her creative mind, if you will, which is just brilliant. She's brilliant.
Yeah, and she was part of a group called the Umbrella Collective, a bunch of years ago. That Allison Vincent, who's in this show, brilliant actor, clown as well. That she was part of. Her wife Leslie Vincent was also in that group. So there's an interesting. I love seeing local directors and actors, but specifically directors who work on sort of this one level and doing great work, and then suddenly they're noticed for what they can bring to the table. I think this is a great sort of initial volley to your point. I'm just going to kind of echo what you said, but I think this initial volley is really great to sort of start her tenure. All the shows I did besides Superman Becomes Lois Lane were under Ron Peluso's direction, and he had steered this ship in a wonderful, wonderful place. This just has it's like a sort of a rebirth, I think, of History Theater now. They're really taken to very different, diverse stories, and not that Ron Peluso didn't, but there is something great having a female artistic director in charge and being like, okay, here's where we're gonna go this way. So many different, wonderful, diverse voices out there, and I think she's gonna tap into that.
Excellent. Yeah. And how did you find yourself as an artist? When did you sort of get bit by the bug, as it were, or when did you sort of start having these storytelling sort of pulls?
Well, okay, I'm gonna go back, but this is not gonna be long because it could take forever, and we don't want to have this about me as much as about the show. But I'll go in a little bit. One of the first times I ever realized that I really enjoyed it was I went to a Christian school from like kindergarten to fifth grade, and I don't remember what grade it was, maybe third, fourth grade. They did an audition. It was a non sort of religious show they were doing in the church, and it was Dennis the Menace. And the teacher had us read stuff, read little lines, and I was like, this is so goofy, but I still remember myself going, I did really well. Like, I think I can do this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have blonde hair. Would they cast a Dennis the Menace with not bl with like a brunette or that redheaded kid? I think I got this. And so I got this role, and I didn't, as I grew, like, I just, I'm from the South, which is like, you're not really taught that it's acting as much as this. You're just pretending. Oh, we're just pretending, because you come out of a movie like Star Wars, you're like, oh man, I feel like I want to, be Han Solo or Luke. So it started kind of there. I kind of hated acting in high school and got bit again sort of in college, and that's where it kind of,
You
ratcheted up.
experience the anxiety of the casting process early on, I see.
I did. And also, like, the massive ego that actors have, like, oh, I got this. Whereas, as you know, like, later on, you're like, when I'm very confident that I got something, I probably didn't get the role. But yeah.
That's exactly.
always how it goes.
That
So
is.
you're where in the South are you from, and how did you end up in the Twin Cities?
I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. I grew up there, and I was there through my 20s. And before then, I'd done a bunch of, especially in Birmingham, the only way to, like, quote, make a living, end quote, as an actor is just to do children's theater, which the only game in town there is Birmingham Children's Theater at the time. And so, I was making what good wage per diem, all that kind of stuff for a number of years there, at least 9 months out of the year during school years. And then I would audition for other children's theater stuff out of state. So I wound up bouncing around between like Richmond, Virginia, and I did some outdoor drama in Ohio. And then I bumped around to like, I actually moved to New Jersey for a while. And one of the only gigs besides really out of focus background and a bunch of Law and Orders and a couple of bad HBO films was a children's theater out of Boston that was auditioning through New York. So I took it, and I happened to one of the guys on the tour was a guy named Don Idle, who started around the aughts. He started a theater company called Starting Gate, and he was like, if you don't want to go back to New Jersey, you should go to Minnesota. I'm like, which city was Minnesota? I don't know where that was in our tour. And he's like, oh, it was St. Kate's. Oh, okay. St. Paul, and you went to that party, met some people. Yeah, okay. Well, I don't want to go back to New Jersey. So I wound up in St. Paul for a while, and just love St. Paul. And I'm a big fan of the t-shirt, Keep St. Paul Boring. It's awesome. Because it's true. We want to keep it boring. And I'm in Minneapolis now, but like that was around, 2001, 2002. So I've just been here ever since.
That's fantastic. And of
Yeah.
course, we have the wonderful Children's Theater of Minneapolis here. We have Stages Theater Company, which does wonderful work. Are there any other ones I'm missing? Oh my goodness.
Well, there's Youth
Play Children's.
Performance Company, but I think that's just kids, maybe. But yeah, I think that's what's great about this is like there's not only that, but there's grant money here. So when I got here, I'm like, I'm getting a stipend. You're paying me to be in a sh I mean, it's not a lot, but it's like more than I, Anyway, it's great to have that sort of level of expertise. You have the big boy theaters, the big girl theaters, and then there's the ones that either community theaters or smaller theaters, or indie theaters that are just like doing brave work. I had never been to a fringe festival before. That was very different. I've written several fringe shows and since then, and it's just a great place to be. And people back home usually go, "Why are you in Minnesota?" I'm like, "Well, the creative ceiling is a lot higher here." And if you can get a nice jacket and some boots and shovel, you can put up with anything.
Even if you're from Alabama, and that's saying a lot. So
That's right.
brave guy, okay? But I really that really resonates what you said, about the creative ceiling being really high, because I think, having worked in other places around the country as well, one of the things that struck me about Minneapolis-St. Paul was the sort of vast expanse of different kinds of performing arts. I mean, we have a puppetry companies. We have dance companies, movement companies. Sometimes they're all together. Acting companies, children's acting companies. You have the Elizabethan singers. You have the Looney till the Looney Lutherans. You have Shakespeare. You have, a sort of this very wide array of options for performing artists, but also as audience members, which is really amazing. And some cities have their like niches, right, of what they do, and some of the big standout companies or things like that. But this is an interesting place, and the fringe is really a huge deal here. It's a big one.
Yeah, I also think on another level, like the improv scene here is
Oh,
ridiculous.
yeah.
And that's like you're saying, you're throwing out all these. That's just one more facet that it's just like when huge theater was at the height of its powers, you could see improv 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
And now that it's gone, it's gotten people to sort of bandy together and find other spaces to do that in. But like you said, it has that is an art form in the same way that dance, in the same way that movement or devised theater is. And there's places for all of them. It is a matter of just let's find a space. Let's make sure that that's basically the hardest thing these days. It's like either theaters are shuttering for a while or whatever, or there's no room to rehearse, and people are getting very scrappy, which is Minnesotans in general. They're so much scrappier. They'll find solutions. They won't just, let's face it, sometimes we'll sit, when there's a bad snowstorm and we'll just wait this out. But the next day is probably going to be, let's dig ourselves out. I got to go to work. Nothing stops. And I think that translates a lot to theater, well, performing in general, just but performance spaces and rehearsal spaces are always really tough to find, yet people do.
There's the rub, right? That's an interesting comment because I think I don't know if we've talked about it on the pod before, but I know I've talked about it with Kevin and Mari. But I had a grad professor who told me that the only people who really understand why Chekhov is funny are like our Minnesotans or Midwesterners because we have 9 months of winter and you sort of go a little crazy. And you are like both in love and also terribly cruel to people when you're stuck in the house with them, you know? And so, all that to say, there is a show or a performance or an art form for any audience member. So if you're listening to this, just kind of Google some, art near me or whatever, and find something and just go try something, whether it's improv or dance or movement theater or puppetry. Go out and see something. Support your, because there's probably a whole bunch of artists rehearsing around the corner in a house, in a basement, in a warehouse, in a, old manufacturing building, performing there. And it's really awesome. It's really awesome.
Well, and you also hit it on the head too with the Minnesota Fringe. I mean, you could literally just go on the Minnesota Fringe website when they announce, their shows and kind of go under dance. There's a filter for dance, a filter for stand up, a filter for improv. And I'm always amazed. And as we've talked about, here and there, is like Minnesota Playlist is obviously good, but that's for a lot of people who are in the know. Whereas Minnesota Fringe is great as well because you can literally find anything and you don't know what you're going to get. And that's the great part of having an hour-long show. It's like, well, okay, that was interesting. I didn't quite get it, but what about this other devised show or what about this other improvised show? And it just opens up I'm opens up a lot of opportunities, not only for performers, but also for people who want to support the arts. And I'm always surprised how many people, what we'll call them normals, who are just like, I don't know what the Fringe is. I don't know what the Twin Cities Horror Festival is, And I'm like, oh man, you gotta go to these, this is some live stuff happening in front of you, live horror, or it's live juggling, or it's clowning, or it's such a wide variety that I think if people can hook themselves into getting used to the Fringe, they'll do it every year.
Yeah, and even something more accessible, like there's always music at the fringe. There's always some stand up, some kind of interactive comedy, and it's a great time. You see a bunch of shows, you walk around uptown.
I
We've seen
also
some great
love,
shows at the fringe. We love the fringe.
yeah, I do too. And I have a sort of a love hate. I've been doing it for so long and been in it and produced sometimes and written. Like a good example of, I'm just building on what you're saying, Mari, is like, last year, I was in the same space as Ted Lasso, the musical, I think it was. And I was like, I mean, they did gangbusters. And the dude who's written, I think he also did a Hamilton Gilligan's Island mashup years ago, and nicest guy in the world. But I was like so envious because he was getting sick audiences. And mine wasn't based on any kind of IP, it was just my only stupid crap in my head. And I'm just like, I'm not jealous, but I'm totally jealous. Like I never wanted to let that show, but you always wonder, like, wow, how did they
Yes.
How do they get that out there? How do they get the normals to show up besides it being a Ted Lasso musical? But you're right, there's stuff for everybody and stuff that's like maybe things that I think are like, oh, really? A mashup of this and this? I'm like, there's an audience for that that I have to go, okay, full on respect, just not my thing. But there's an audience, and I always forget that where I'm like, I tried to do this weird thing that only really fished for people who love the weird stuff, but a lot of people are just like, I want something that's catchy and fun. So,
No, and I think everything is under an hour. So it's also really great to kind of dip your toes into stuff and be like, if you don't like something, you can always go back another night to something else, you know? And so if you want tickets to Minnesota Fringe, you can find that at minnesotafringe.org. And it's running August 6th through 16th this year. 6th through 16th in the summer. Put some shorts and sandals on. Grab a drink, walk around, not in that order probably, but see some shows. It's always a great time, you
And
know?
also, I want to plug because I've got a show in the Minnesota Fringe.
That's what we're here
So
for.
there it
Absolutely.
is. And we're also taking the same show to Green Bay Fringe a month earlier in July. Yes.
That's
So
your out of
that's
town
allowed.
tryouts.
Yeah.
Yes. That's allowed. That's allowed as long as you don't come back wearing a certain color jersey, a green jersey.
Fair. I'm not a sports guy. And I get the as soon as I moved here, I didn't understand it. But in Alabama, there's Auburn, Alabama, the college team.
Are you
So,
a Roll Tide?
well, see, my dad went to Auburn, so it's more like a War Eagle thing, but not
Ooh.
really because they're total underdogs. They never win. And I'm not, again, not a sports guy. My mom was dyed in the wool, Auburn, just because my dad went there, my cousins went there. I don't think she ever watched a game. But whatever, she would get mad if Alabama won, and I'm like, why do you care?
You
You
didn't
don't
even know
care,
until 2 days later.
right? It doesn't
Yeah.
matter. You didn't go to the Iron Bowl. It's not like you went. But up here, I get it because these are pro teams, and man, it's heated. It's very heated. But I will not come back. I'm not going to come back one way or the other because I don't care if Vikings, Packers, what? It doesn't matter. But yeah, I hear it's great. Green Bay Fringe is supposed to be really awesome.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on getting it there and
Thank
hope
you.
everything goes well. So let's plug. I want you to speak a little bit about that show, and then we'll dive into your current project, Hungry, why we're both here, Hungry Like the Wolf. But Sam, tell us a little bit about your friend show.
Well, this is a new thing because my girlfriend and I, Nissa Nordland, we developed this thing a few years ago that was going to be a video series called Bury the Leads. And it's spelled LEADS versus the actual journal. It's about journalistic intention. It's about two character actors. And we have a structured improv set where we get little suggestions at the beginning, but we basically have scenarios that all actors go through. There are sections of improv where it's Clyde and Faye are the two characters we play. And so one will be Clyde's self-tape. So it'll be like, I don't know, a minute of that. And then it's Faye's self-tape. Then it'll be a minute of that. And then we just have generic things, scenarios, industry mixer, hanging out after a show, that kind of stuff. And it's all improvised. We have been doing this for a while live. We did it a while back at Strike at the Bryant Lake Bowl. And we've developed this as. Oh, I wouldn't say serialized, but because they're characters that are very similar to us, we feel like any kind of structured improv, we want to separate that from, say, just regular Whose Line Is It Anyway comedy sports improv. So we're not just trying to make people laugh. A lot of our stuff is very intimate. It's very cinematic acting, film acting. Still funny if it needs to be. But we'd almost rather have people be more engaged with these characters. And even if you're not an actor, I think you'll realize that some of the things that actors have to deal with in your average day, the stupid crap that we do, and how silly the industry really is. And at the end of the day, it's like, wow, I got paid $300 an hour for walking around in this mascot costume. If my theater instructor had told me that, when I was in college and said, most jobs are in a mascot costume or you're going to be saying some really stupid crap while eating, fish sticks. I probably would have been like, yeah, I'll pass. I don't want to be an actor. That sounds horrible.
Right.
But we're playing up a lot of the, some of them are tropes, but a lot of them are things that actors kind of watch and go, oh my God, that hurts so bad because I'd done that exact same thing and you guys did an improvised scene around it. So it's called Bury the Leads. And we'll be doing that for Green Bay Fringe and also Minnesota Fringe. So that's
Do
kind of
you
the idea, basically.
Two things. It makes me think of these videos that are going around Instagram and TikTok right now, like where the caption is, "Oh, if only my parents knew that they were paying for this, for my MFA or my BFA or something." And it's like, this is my thesis, and it's this girl crawling around making cat noises and like acting like a cat in this scene with like, improvising as a cat with different students coming into. Oh gosh, it's
That's
real. I mean.
basically it. I mean, except we're taking it to that extreme where like, we do we try to keep as close to what being an actor, not necessarily a working actor, because sometimes, that does vary depending on which way the wind blows, but a lot of that is just people going, that can't be real. Yeah, you'll literally be on the way to an audition, on camera audition. You'll be in the shower. You'll be getting ready. You'll be in your car. You'll be in the waiting room, all the time doing these three lines in your head over and over and over. It's torturous, and sometimes you wonder why are we doing this? And at the end of the day, you do it because you love doing it, and I think that comes through. We're trying to sort of poke fun at the industry, but also go, well, if we didn't love it, if the thrill of the chase wasn't there, if our agents were putting us out, would we still be doing it? And
Yeah.
I think it would be, even if we're like, oh, I didn't do anything here. I don't feel like I accomplished anything or made any money, but I still put something out in the world.
Yeah, my husband is constantly like, why do you get rejected this or all of the things that I'm sure that you cover in your amazing show, Bury the Leads. See it at Minnesota Fringe, Green Bay Fringe. And he's just like, man, I don't know how you do it. I like, how do you take that? And why do you audition there again if they, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's just 'cause you, dang it, you love it.
Yeah, what else am I going to do? Like, I
Yeah.
mean, I'm going to write something and maybe perform it or write it for somebody else. But ultimately, I'd like performing. So, or pretending or whatever it was I was doing when I was, six. And that's why we do
Yes.
it, you know? That's why
Yes.
we do it.
I'm too silly to be in real life,
Yeah, it's true.
But speaking of writing and acting, let's dive in because Sandra Struthers, many audiences, especially at History Theater, may know her from Glen Sheen, the wonderful, amazing musical that is about the Glen Sheen mansion and the murders that happened there. She's in that. She's hilarious. Jen Marin was also the lead in that, of course, and she's also in this show, Hungry Like the Wolf. But Sandra Struthers also wrote Hungry Like the Wolf. She wrote this play and she's in it, so which is extremely rare. And Sam, I think you can attest to that, that at this level, I guess it's really hard to achieve that. Most times, they're doing, regional theaters will be doing plays that are by, I don't want to say more established playwrights or young playwrights, but they're not actors as well. They're not performing their own work. So can you give us the plug of this show in a nutshell and tell us a little bit about what the process was like, also being a writer actor?
Well, to add a little bit to what you said, like that, to people who've never seen a History Theater show, their mission statement is literally new work every time, which this is, as the previous one, Andrew Wheeler's Whoosh was, and the scores of shows before and after Hours. So, Hungry Like the Wolf is at its core, it is about sort of the labor rights and gender equity of the work force. And back in the book, another part of the mission statement for History Theater is that it needs to be a Minnesota story, therefore history. And this took place, I think, in 77, 60, 76, 77, in Willmar, Minnesota. Eight women went on strike. It was the very first bank strike in the United States. No one had ever done a strike against banks, specifically women. And specifically women who would, they would protest with signs through the heat, through 70 below wind chill. That's in the play. That's not something I'm making up. I'm not just pulling that out. So it is at its core, in terms of why it's at History Theater, the Willmar Eight. They were instrumental in just showing that there is a limit to where you can be like, oh, I was passed over by a man who has half the experience that I do, who hasn't worked here as long as I have. So at its core, it's that. And out on top of that, it's through Sandra's lens of growing up in the 80s, loving Duran Duran. And it seems like those two things wouldn't kind of intersect, and yet she kind of has a way of sort of melding things together, weaving them together. It's set up half as sort of a moth, you know, the moth storytelling, and then Willmar 8, and then Duran Duran, and then the Willmar 8 documentary, and the Willmar 8 made for TV movie based on the documentary, and Sandra's relationship with Lee Grant, actor in Hollywood, who this is getting confusing even for me explaining it, who directed the documentary because she wasn't feel like didn't feel like her career was moving anywhere as a female actor. So she did the directing, you know, she that was her first opportunity to direct. And then they made a made for TV movie that included her daughter, who was also an actor, who was in Grease and some other a lot of other films. Anyway, that seems very scattershot. And yet, as you know, Amanda, it does come together and it coalesces in a very interesting and fun and humorous and also at times very oof, very touching. And then sometimes just it just breaks your heart, and it kind of destroys you in at times. She's very direct about her point of view, which I think history theater audiences aren't used to, and I think they're getting used to it. And I think that's good. I think that's also how Laura is, the director, is also pushing her audiences just a little bit to be like, hey, you know, this is history too, and this is a point of view as well. And it may be tough to swallow at times, but it's the truth. And again, the 80s pretty much keep the levity going, just because the 80s were fun and silly, and there's nothing too heavy about the 80s, really. But essentially, it's about the Willmar Eight. That's a lot. So you asked a very small question, and I'm sorry for going on and on about it, but.
No, that's what we're here for. Mari.
So the show is about the Willmar Eight, but I couldn't help but notice that there are not eight people in the cast. So I assume that you are all playing multiple roles. How many roles do you play? And can you tell us about one or two or a few of them?
That is a great point, because I don't know if your average audience member is going to be there and be like, wait a minute, there, I'm counting this many people. It's supposed to be eight women. Technically, okay, so it's Sandra who is the, you know, protagonist, the main sort of narrator, storyteller. And then we have three women who are playing all the women. Now, because it's a lot of it is sort of through the lens of A, the documentary, but also B, the made-for-TV movie based on the documentary. There are some interesting, I don't know if you call them takes, but there are character choices made in the 80s made-for-TV movie, which is also where the 80s come in too. The 80s TV movie, some of these actors are taking some interesting license with the original women. So it really was up to these three women, Jen Burley Betts, Jen Marin, Allison Vincent, to be able to compartmentalize. And Amanda, obviously, you've seen so many runs of it, to compartmentalize who Glennis would be in real life versus the made-for-TV documentary, the actress who played her, or Irene, who she really is versus who she was portrayed as in the made-for-TV movie. But yes, it's multiple characters, and my character is literally just, I think we're all actually just woman one, woman two, woman three, and then I am man. And I hope this doesn't go over the radio. The only description, and we can re-record it if we need to, the only description of my character is all douchey men. I don't know if we need to replace that word. Anyway, but it's, I don't know.
We'll see. I don't
I'll
know if
just
that one's
on that one.
okay, actually. You know.
I can do an alt if you need me to. Anyway,
Nope.
okay, fine. You can bleep it, I'm sure it's fine.
There we go.
But basically, I play, even when there are man characters that are actually really cool, like Simon Le Bon, the lead singer of Duran Duran, that's given to Allison. This play is doing this sort of meta commentary about like the one man in the show is a peripheral character, and women do all the really cool stuff. Every time I come out on stage, I am some jerky guy, right? Whether that's someone you know or someone who's part of the documentary or part of the made-for-TV movie. And so I think that meta commentary is kind of fascinating to me, because when I started reading it, I'm like, oh, so where do I go? Like, okay, when I'm done with this, my scene, where do I go? And Laura's like, we're just gonna have you sit in the back of the in up way upstage. You're not being used. You sit there, then you come up and do something, then you just kind of go back. And at first I was like, that's a really weird way to do it. And then also the play explores, and very blatantly explores, the fact that women as they age don't have as many opportunities. Either the shows aren't written for them, or we're talking about old school theater, hallmarks that don't have more than maybe one woman role, female role. And some of those are like moms, sex worker, whatever, abused, or the woman who's being saved.
Like the hag or the witch or the old crone or it's the
It's
standard
all the
tropes. It's like
tropes.
the young maiden, the woman in her prime, and then the crone, right?
Yeah.
So
And so that's basically, they flip it. So I play all the jerks, losers, weirdos, odd perverts that come out of the woodwork in Sandra's life, or in Hollywood, or whatever. I mean, I play everything from like her babysitter. Sorry, she was a babysitter for her neighbors, and this older man, 30 years older than her, was hitting on her in the car when he dropped her off. I play that guy, Mr. Peterson, and I also play like Warren Beatty or Judge Reinhold or David
David
Mamet.
Mamet.
Yeah, so there's a lot of those things that are great. They're real fun, but also, I'll be honest, like the white straight actor takes these roles because you need a villain. I mean, with new voices come new ways of framing the characters within it. And so my acting instructor in college is like, I'd rather be typecast than not cast at all. Because typecasting can be really bad. It can also be very good if you know your type. And I know my type. So as actors, we all know that there are those moments where you go, okay, I'm playing the racist jerk here. I'm playing the misogynist prick here. It's a paycheck. And that sounds very like, maybe that's a little glib, but that's the role that I, as a, white, in some productions, in some, things, I would play that. And that's the age range I'm in. That's how, like any type, it's what you look like and what you play. And I was fine with it. I found that, if I can bring one weird thing up that I've only talked to Laura, the director, about, So, Dish Girls.
Ooh, here we go.
Gonna spill
Give
some
us some
tea.
tea.
That's right, they call it tea. It's not really dishing anymore. That is so old. But I'm old. So, one of the things that Laura, and again, love Laura Loeffler so much. She reached out early on, emailed me. And this was maybe the first week, and she said, "Hey, I know this is some heavy subject matter, and I know you're playing all the bad guys, and I know that that could wear on some people. And if it does, please reach out to me and tell me. Please tell me what we need to do to make it f you feel safe or whatever." And my heart just melted because I was like, I was feeling that. The script is pretty hardcore on men, and I'm not saying it's incorrect for doing that. That's a point of view, and in almost every case, I feel like, yeah, valid. Every time I look at something and go, oh God, that's totally valid. But in the room, as we all know, as actors, there are times where, let's say the playwright, especially when she is right there and she's asking for, oh, what would be an alt line for this? Or how would we handle this? How would this work? When you're in the room, there's always that, tendency to throw out some ideas. I felt like, and this did a little bit of a zap on my head for a while, as the only male in the room, not just in the ensemble, but also the production team is all female, as you pointed out before. I found myself just, it's being said. I'm not going to add something. I'm not going to be that guy who has to yell over somebody. I was also raised by a single mom. So a lot of that is kind of put in me a little bit to be like, it's very different now from when I grew up. But the thought is that there are other voices, there are other people who can talk about it. And there are times I would just be like, whereas normally in a room I would really like be vocal about some kind of idea, I would just kind of sit there. I would let it happen. And as an actor, most of the time you do that. But as a male actor in a room full of women, you don't want to be that guy who's also yelling over people. And I think I learned that probably way too late in my life. But I don't know. It didn't, it put a zap on my head at first because I was like, wow, I feel like I'm not contributing anything. Yet I'm playing all the guys that need to be played. So I am contributing something, but I feel like in the creation process, there was some of that that was all on me. That was not anybody who was telling me, look, we don't want to hear the guy's perspective. And that was just in my head being like, just, it's cool not to speak sometimes. Says the guy who's been speaking for the past 12 minutes. But I'm just saying, that was a
That's why
very,
you're here.
yes, thank you. But that was a
This is
really
your chance. You've been silent through the rehearsal process, and
Yes.
now we're interviewing you.
Okay,
Spill it, Sam.
where's all this tea coming from? No, that's it. And again, this is not some kind of, ooh, this is controversial. But it did, because Laura reached out to me early on, I felt very comfortable to speak, but just preferred not to. It also, but it did make me feel like, and I did tell her that too. I was like, if I don't speak in certain at certain times, it's not because I don't feel like I can't. I feel like I just it's cool not to, and to let the conversation happen and ideas come. And if somebody's asking me, cool, but I might not be as jumping in with stuff. Also, Allison Vincent's mind, she has a mind that is like, she will come, she'll always go, and she's very respectful. She'll say something like, may I suggest something? And it she prefaces it with that, and then it's going to be something that's just like really intensely funny, or just something you never really thought of. And everybody else was throwing out stuff, great stuff too, but Allison is one of those people because she does work with Four Humors now, and she is such a physical actor and very funny and such a good actor as well, just all of these things. But she would usually like I felt like I didn't need to add anything because Allison had some great stuff. So anyway, that's the tea I've spilled. We can clean it up if we need to.
Piping
But
hot tea right here on Frogtown Radio, Minnesota Playlist, and Spotify, badmouthtc.com. I mean, the podcast is called Mouthing Off, Sam. So you're spilling it and you're mouthing off. I love it.
girl,
No,
that's great.
two things. Both Sam and Allison have these incredibly physical. There are a couple moments. Sam's old man. When you're the old man in the walker, go see the show. It is worth the price of the ticket. You will laugh so hard. I mean, and the bucket hat, it's just brilliant. He's brilliant. And Allison's physical comedy work is also just outstanding. So this play is, I will say it's very heavy and very, there's no out for men. There's no
Right.
out for men. There's no apology. There's no good guy. Literally, there's no good guy. So that can be tough. But there is comedy, lighter moments, joy, wonderful lightness, all of that. And it's interesting, Sam, that you, I was going to ask you, actually about how you were as an actor person dealing with, living in that, you know, because it's like somebody who's, you know, doing, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of a play, other, you know, somebody other than Hamlet, but you know, a show like that, and then sitting in it for, you know, not, you know, you're doing it for what, 4 weeks or and rehearsal, so 8 weeks. But if you're doing it for like 6 months or, you know, a year on Broadway or whatever, you know, I mean, any length of time can really wear on a person. And I was having some issues, like when I was sitting in Sandra's shoes, learning her lines in this perspective, is that it's so strongly, you know, touches on all kinds of women's interactions with men and sort of these issues from gender inequity and workplace harassment, sexual harassment, abuse, male manipulation, psychological manipulation, all these different ranges of female experience that are touched on in the play. It's not just kind of one or two. It's a lot. And yeah, it can be a lot to it can be a lot to sit in, even from the from Sandra's perspective. I don't want to speak for her, but for myself, who's learning her track, you know, or
Yeah.
learned her track, it is quite a lot, you know.
I also think it's yeah, I'm gonna add one little thing to that, and it's
Yeah.
kind of what you're saying, and I this you inspire me to remember the basic tenet of this production, which is like there's nothing passive about it. It takes the it takes what you know. Some still in our country can, I'm not going to get political. Some in our country will have a certain perspective on the woman's place or whatever. And in a lot of spaces, there are women who are subjected to that. And this is not passive in that way. This is very active. And to your point, it is a little, it's very uncomfortable at times. I will say this, and you'll know what I'm talking about, obviously, is there's a bingo moment where they play bingo. There are some words on that bingo screen, but there's a collective bingo card. Obviously, we won't say them here, but they have never been uttered on the History Theater stage. And they're very, very oof. You know, even Minnesota's are like, ooh, I don't know if we want to talk about that. It's like, no, we need to talk about this. And I think that's what I like about a lot of it. I think in one way you can look at it as in your face, which I think I did at first. And in another way, I'm not saying it's some show about where we're learning things, but I think certain people in the audience could. The bingo game, and I don't know if we need to explain it, but the bingo game itself is one of those things where if a woman who has been married to someone for, I don't know, 10, 20 years or whatever, sees that bingo game and can look at one of those bingo cards that's about being groped by a stranger or having to say you had a boyfriend when somebody hit on you just so the man wouldn't, you know, be sad or whatever. If they see their partner nodding or going, yep, and they didn't know that about that person, maybe that'll open up conversation. That's not
So
the
what you're
point, but
saying
go
is
ahead.
it's the perfect date night show.
It depends on how your date is, really. I mean, if it's a first date, maybe you, and let's just say the date was going badly, and you're like, I want to test this guy, this person. I'm not gonna say guy, just in general. I'm gonna test this person. Like, it's not going great. Let's see if they can, if I can nudge them this way, can they take this? Because I think a lot of it is very much, it's not just good-natured ribbing. It has some solid pain points that are kind of pushed through. And yeah, it's not passive, which I think is a good thing, but also it's really testing the history theater audience, the typical history theater audiences.
And I think the heavy-handedness, whether you like that or it happens to be your style or kind of writing that you or performances that you like to see, I think that it's good for Minnesota audiences to be exposed to that. A lot of times it's like this kind of wishy-washy and like, oh, here's our kind of message and like, what people are walking away with, but it's sort of this like, oh, we can kind of forget about it at the lobby bar. This you're not going to really do that with. And whether you are agreeing with the sort of, I want to say all of the sentiment of the play, because some of it I'll be totally honest with, I don't, that whether you come away with it knowing what it is,
Yes.
and it's a strong intention, and that's what I think people need to be experienced have more experience with, like especially Midwestern audiences. Like I said, a lot of sometimes it's a little safe, it's a little safe, and it's okay to see things that really make you mad. It's really okay. It's awesome to see stuff that like, man, that makes you so passionate and fall in love and be like, holy cow, that is what I have been feeling and I could never put into words or to paper. I didn't know other people felt that way. And like, there it is, like, weeping. That's what it is. That's why we do what we do. And I, again, looping back in, I think that's sort of where Laura is really going to take history theater. Yeah, Mari.
Oh, we're coming up on time here. So I know these always fly by. It's always so great, especially when you have a chatty guest. It's just the best time. We dish it out, we spill the tea. So I guess both of you, because you are both involved with this show, if you could give us like a one sentence pitch about why people should go see Hungry Like the Wolf at History Theater, what would you tell them?
You go first, or
Oh no. Oh shoot.
she's talking to you too. They're
I
talking to you
okay,
too.
because you will be rolling on the floor laughing and also the next second like kind of feel sick to your stomach because you know that that happened to somebody you know or you if you're a female. Which is a little it's very like a roll, like very much like a roller coaster, up down, up down, up down, up down, and you can never quite catch yourself on the ride until it's over, and you're kind of walking away like, which is awesome. That's what we want. So, Sam, that was not hardly coherent at all. That was more imagery, but go ahead, Sam.
I think they'll follow it. I would say, yeah, it's the 6 degrees of separation, linking the Wilmerite, which is the first female-led bank strike in the United States, and teenage girl's obsession with Duran Duran, and everything in between that, from the gender inequity of the Wilmerite to how even Simon Le Bon might even personify the some of the bad things that men do that women have to deal with.
Well,
Yes.
Sam, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you? Drop your website, drop your Instagram.
Yeah, I think you can basically find me on the I'm not going to say the old person, but I might be the oldest person here tonight. You could find me on Facebook, just Sam Landman. I also do DJ gigs under the name Gust Avocados. But also in terms of Instagram, you can find me at as he looks it up slowly. I see, I should know this. It is
S. Landman.
it's
That's
just
the
S.
handle.
Landman. God,
S.
it's that
Landman.
simple. How did I have to dig for that? Yes, it's just S. Landman. Not hard to find me, but yeah, I think that's mostly it. Those two little, I don't do a TikTok. I'm not young, so.
I don't do the TikTok either.
No, nobody
You
worth
know,
following.
no, that's okay. Here we are. We're on the old-timey radio. That's better anyway.
That's right.
Hi, audiences on the old-timey radio. This has been an awesome episode with Sam Landman, Mari Sittner, and I'm Amanda Forstrom. And you can find us at badmouthtc.com. And you've been listening to Mouthing Off, which will be on your Frogtown radio. So hello, Frogtown, and good night.